Hey, all you blood bags. Tonight we've got a fantastic episode that'll really drain your main vein, if you know what I mean. We're talking about my favorite kind of suckers. No, not the guys who sent money to that Nigerian prince. Vampires. Not just the boring and stiff Nosferatu type, but the sexy and stiff Casanova type, too. If Gary Oldman's your kind of vamp, I'm more of a young Bill Paxton fang girl myself. We had a scream watching these crypt dwellers this week and are stokered to share our picks with you. Come hell or high holy water, Speak All Evil is here to fill the hole that that pesky stake left. Why don't you let us come inside? Don't let Keanu's British accent creep you away. Speak All Evil starts in two steaks of a lamb's tail. Was that too much?
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent. I am deep down in my tomb of doom. I'm here with Kevin, Kat, Dave. Hey, guys, how's it going?
What's going on?
I don't know what's so funny. We're talking about vampires this week. I don't think we need a lot of explanation there. But before we get going, just a quick programming note. We try to remember to tell you guys where to watch the movies that we're talking about. But as you know, one thing that happens is that these movies tend to go on and off different streaming services and different rental platforms, different subscriptions. So what we do is we use justwatch.com, all right? Just Watch, one word, justwatch.com. Enter your movie in there. It will tell you every possible place you can watch on the internet. If it's not on there, it's not on the internet. And unfortunately, we do run into that sometimes. And so we try to avoid those movies. And we'll talk about that a little bit more tonight. This is probably my favorite batch of movies that we have done together since, like, maybe the French Horror episode, back episode 4, I think. I loved all of these vampire movies. To me, they're all stone-cold classics. Kevin, you went old school this week. What'd you bring to the table?
So I went with 1987's Near Dark. And unfortunately, like you were just talking about, Trent, at the time that I picked this, it was on the Criterion Channel.
Yes.
This is actually 50% of our picks this week were from the Criterion Collection.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it's gone. It's not there anymore. So this is a movie, like I said, 1987. I actually never saw this movie until probably around the time Netflix started doing DVDs in the mail. And you'd think, watching as much horror as I did as a kid, this came out like in a time when there was a ton of horror coming out. I never heard of it. I think it's because it came out the same year as another little vampire movie called The Lost Boys, and got lost in the shuffle a little bit. So I didn't catch this until, like I said, Netflix. And again, it was like DVD delivery, but this is a Kathryn Bigelow movie, which, again, I also didn't know that Kathryn Bigelow directed this until I revisited it last week or whenever I caught it. You know, she has a very diverse catalog. Probably one of her better known movies was Point Break. But I love this movie. I love Bill Paxton. I love that we have a Bill Paxton back to back week with Dave having Frailty. And basically, to kind of kick off the conversation, this movie is essentially taking the cast of Aliens and putting them as a bunch of vampires all traveling across the country in a van with all of the windows blacked out. But I'd love to know what you guys think of it, because obviously I have plenty more.
I thought this was a very interesting vampire movie. I had never seen it. I definitely saw The Lost Boys, so I think I was kind of comparing it to that the whole time. But it's very different. Both, like, I guess it's kind of similar style-wise. Like, it's a Western, like, definitely, like, it's out in the Midwest, like Oklahoma or something like that. And there weren't, like, I like that there weren't a lot of like traditional tropes like for the vampires, like they were, you know, driving around in their little tinfoiled out van. But there, you know, there's no crosses, there's no holy, no one's coming to like get them with holy water. Like it's all a very, you know, what would normal people in a Midwestern town do if all of a sudden these freaky people walked into their bar and started doing like some weird shit. Like they're just trying to shoot them and it's obviously not working. It was hard to like be on the team, like team vampire for this movie, because most of the people, well, most of the vampires were basically, they ate people who tried to like show them kindness. And then just were like, just kidding, you know, oh, this kid's, you know, in the street on his bike, I better help him. Nope, you're dead now. Oh, I'll give these people a ride. You know, nope, you're dead. So they were dicks, but I do love me some Daddy Paxton.
I like that they like, these vampires are really scrupulous about who they recruit. Like, they're not just biting, eating anyone because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge commitment. I mean, I can't imagine if I was a vampire having to decide, oh, who do I want to make live for a billion years? You know, because that also is part of the baggage that, you know, comes with it is that, you know, now this person is going to be around for a billion years and they're going to be trying to eat the same people you're trying to eat. You know, there's too many vampires in this town for both of us, that kind of scenario. But, you know, I saw this movie also in the 2000s. I didn't see it when it came out. I feel like I put it in this category of like Cinemax After Dark art erotic horror, which it's not really that erotic, but
unfortunately
no boobs in this one, right? No boobs. Did anyone see any boobs?
No,
you see all of that one woman's boobs besides her nipples. It's like all of the boob.
Yeah,
some of these movies that came out in like the late 80s, early 90s that had a similar like art house feel now are like my favorite horror movies. When back then I was definitely looking for something a little more lowbrow and gory.
Yeah, same. I totally had the same like kind of journey.
I had never seen this one, and this is definitely my favorite of the week. Great pick, Kevin. This, when I watched it, was on Criterion a few weeks ago. We talked about this movie, and it was on the Criterion Network, like Kevin said. But there is a version on YouTube for free, and it's one of those weird, I don't know what you call it, when it's, I think they do this to get away from, to somehow elude the YouTube cops, but it's where it's only part of the screen. And they have
They have like the Olin Mills background.
Yeah. So there is a full version of Near Dark on YouTube. And I watched it once on Criterion and then it was gone. And I watched it again on YouTube last night just to have it fresh in my mind. It's a little sped up, but I didn't really notice that. I noticed that it's only an hour and 18 minutes on YouTube, which didn't.
See, that was the first thing I noticed. And I was like, why?
It didn't detract.
It's hard to focus.
There's so many movies now that, for whatever reason, maybe they're not available online because they're older.
Yes.
Or some of these foreign releases that come out that we don't have access to. Like, I will watch anything, any version that I get. I don't care if there's a guy standing right up in the middle of the screen in the movie theater. Like, if there's weird, like, a Mountain Dew logo on it the whole time, or, like, I have to block pop-ups. I'll do whatever. And it reminds me of when you had to look between the lines to see the porn. You know, it's that same sort of viewing. It's just like squinty-eyed late night.
I think it's better than that. Well, don't be afraid to dial this up on YouTube. I did it last night. I wasn't distracted at all, and maybe that's just because I love this movie so much. This is one of two vampire westerns that we watched this week, and I don't know what it is about the vampire western setting that really, I guess you could say I'm a sucker for it. But there's something really spooky about the, especially when you get into like the American Southwest. There's a lot we talked about, Let the Right One In, back in episode one, the remake Let Me In, the American remake, was set in the American Southwest. You have movies like From Dusk Till Dawn, and the list sort of goes on. Another one we'll talk about tonight, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I just love that vibe. I love that feel, and I loved that this was a... I guess I don't know what you call a group of vampires. Is it a coven?
Yes.
What you call it a coven?
Mm-hmm.
You call it a coven?
That's what they're called.
I thought that was just witches.
I mean, it's a group. Yeah.
Thought it was like a clan. Or like a nest.
According to Punipedia, when I was looking it up, my puns for the week.
We're questioning the actual only goth kid.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a coven. Okay. Well,
I might
be
wrong.
See, normally in vampire movies, it's the singular, soul, lonely, lone wolf vampire. Rarely do you have this very tight-knit sort of group. They're almost like a rock band or a band of gypsies or carnies. They're in this camper van. They're out on the road going from town to town, hotel to hotel, bar to bar.
I mean, people procreate like crazy in these small Midwest towns anyway, but imagine if every time you bit someone, you made another vampire.
Yes.
You know, that's... So I think the packs of vampires would be likely, you know, instead of these one-offs.
Mm-hmm. They seem to... There's a difference between, like, they seem to... Some people they just feed on, and then some people they... I don't know how they decide who Do they just turn everyone? Because they bring Caleb into the group,
mm-hmm.
but they feed on lots of people that and kill lots of people that they don't bring into the group. Now, do they all turn into vampires? It's unclear to me.
No, I think if they kill them during the act, they don't come back. But if they just feed on them, it seems like instantaneous.
Well, that was another thing, too, that was kind of weird is they didn't really explain much. There was some sort of intravenous thing happening that was helping people, and we had no idea what was going into them, why it was helping them. That was the only part.
They were blood transfusions, so basically... Kind of like the alternate ending to like 28 Days Later. They're trying to say that if you give somebody a near full blood transfusion, it will cure them. And you're
that's
right,
they do
kind of gloss it over, but
That's what they do in Bram Stoker's Dracula as well. Remember, they give Lucy the transfusions.
Right.
That's
but it don't work.
It don't work.
I appreciated the happy ending, I will say. I'm a sucker
for
those.
Yeah, so there is sort of a love angle to this, which, you know, I don't know. I thought it, for the most part, worked. I think anything with Bill Paxton playing this character in it, you could drop him into any movie and I would watch it again. Maybe not as many times as Near Dark, but he's fucking out of his mind.
I feel like you could also have dropped any other actor into that role for this one. I like Bill Paxton, but okay. Kurt Russell.
Dave, you nailed it. A couple weeks ago, you said that Rowdy Roddy Piper could just be substituted for Bill Paxton in this movie.
Yes.
And it's true. Like, he's especially in the bar scene, which the bar scene, this is one of my favorite scenes in any movie ever. But it's Bill Paxton doing Rowdy Roddy Piper doing Bill Paxton as a vampire.
That whole bar scene is so weird, and it got me thinking, like, do you think that it's never like made clear in this movie, but do you think that people are aware of vampires? Because the bar scene is fantastic, but it's so weird. There's like very little reaction to the first killing. It's almost like the people in the bar watch them kill the first person and they're just ready to order their next drink. And then it devolves into like chaos. And by the time it gets to the, you know, come on, dance with me scene, it is just brutal.
That poor guy.
I always love it when there's always the shady guys playing pool in movies. And usually, you know, you have a run in the parking lot or something with these guys. They try to buy you a drink. They do this, the sarcastic drink buy. And then, you know, you have trouble. But I like it when they get it. Whenever the badass is playing pool, get killed. That's a very satisfying moment for me.
The way this whole bar scene unfolds to me is just masterful, and there's sort of a mounting dread. Like you said, Kevin, like, you know, they're hanging out. This is a pretty rough and tumble place out in a rough and tumble area. And yeah, so, you know, somebody gets in a fight at the bar. You don't want to act like you've never seen it before. You don't really want to act like anything is startling you. You've seen some blood in there. You've seen some guts. But yeah, eventually the bartender's getting the gun out, and then things really start going off the rails.
And I do want to, you know, point out the rest of the cast too, because one of the other vampires is played by, you know, I think we could call him a horror legend. It's in Lance Henriksen.
Man, I love it. He's my favorite character, Jesse.
Yeah. And then Jenny Wright plays May, who is the love interest that we're talking about. Adrian Pasdar plays Caleb, who is the unsuspecting young man who is turned and brought into this group kind of reluctantly. And then Jeanette Goldstein as Diamondback. And it's Paxton, Henriksen, and Goldstein, who all had just starred the year prior in Aliens, which was a James Cameron flick. And at the time, James Cameron was thought to be messing around with Catherine Bigelow a little bit. Then most of his cast ends up in her movie. Then he cameos in the movie as the guy that flips off Paxton's character, Severin. And then the next year, Catherine Bigelow and James Cameron got married for a brief 2-year nuptial.
Oh my God, I'm tearing up. I'm clutching my pearls and tearing up right now. That's such a beautiful story.
Kevin, you mentioned Point Break, and this was Catherine Bigelow's second feature. She did a movie called The Loveless before this with Willem Dafoe that I haven't seen. It looks interesting, but this is a future Academy Award winner for Best Picture and Best Director, The Hurt Locker. I forget what year that was. Mm-hmm. But this is yet another person who got their start in this kind of seedy underground horror movie and walked home with all the gold.
Oh, just like Peter Jackson.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, God.
This,
yeah. Zing. No, Bigelow's filmography is incredibly diverse.
I think it's pronounced Bugalo.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, we're not listening to you anymore. You keep advising us on how to pronounce things, and then we sound like a bunch of stupid rednecks.
They're all wrong. Every single one is wrong.
Like Bottom.
Anyway, this movie, you know, a lot of vampire movies take this kind of metaphor with heroin, with addiction generally. But I think this movie very much gets into that sort of, you know, I think that the gang is sort of like the junkie gang. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but once you're brought into this, once you're initiated, your life changes drastically. And all you really have is this group of people, and you're all addicted to the same thing. And that was sort of, I thought, one of the things where they're pushing Caleb to finally do his first kill. He's kind of baby bird fed by May. She lets him drink her blood, and then she does a kill for him. And at some point, the gang leader, Jesse, and the rest of the gang, they're like, you got to go make your kill. You got to go do something for the group. And to me, that was pretty obvious, like, you gotta make the score tonight. You know, you're getting a free ride. We're out there getting all the stuff. And when are you gonna go out and bring something home that we can all do? I think that runs through pretty much all of the movies we watched this week as a sort of a metaphor, I guess.
I also liked in this movie, they got hit with the UV rays from the sun in the morning, like every vampire does. I like the way that they just like caught on fire and started smoking. I like that much better than when they dissolve.
Oh yeah,
I don't like the dissolving vampires. It's a very bad digital effect.
Yeah,
instant
when
cremation.
He's just like walking under the blanket that's on fire, and all the cops are like, "What the fuck?" I think that
super
there shows that this town has never, like, they don't know fucking vampires exist, you know. So they're seeing someone walking on fire and get into a car, and they're like, "What do we shoot? What do we do? Like, what is this?"
I feel bad for people who aren't from cities like Portland and never get to experience vampires or lobsters and red hot dogs and
Italian sandwiches. the theme that you were talking about, Trent, with like the drug addiction too. I think I picked up on like a really strong theme of family again in this one, where Caleb, you know, sort of is ripped away from what is seemingly this perfect family and joins, you know, the Sex Pistols, basically. And May is a part of, you know, the vampire rock band. And the movie kind of moves along, sort of focusing on their quasi love story. But at the end of the day, it comes down to they each have to pick their families or not. And then they kind of have to figure out if they're picking each other as well. So the love story worked mostly for me. But I kind of think one of the overlooked things, because it is a horror movie and a Western, is sort of that theme of family.
Sect. We haven't figured out what the name of vampires are, but when they all kind of work together and they look out for each other, it's like a gang.
I think Kat looked it up and she said it's coven, and we just don't like that.
I think it's what
happened.
Is it really because that's my name?
Let's take a quick.
Well, I wish it was something better. I mean,
I think I've heard it called Nest before, but a nest seems like they wouldn't leave.
That's their home base. Yeah,
that's like what Sam and Dean from Supernatural call it.
Yes.
Do vampires lay eggs? I mean, how do they procreate besides for already?
No, I think they're mammals. I'm not sure.
And what happens if you get a cat? You probably know this. What happens when you get impregnated by a vampire?
What was the question?
In your experiences, what happens when you get impregnated by a vampire? Is your child a vampire?
Or the according to the, I think Academy Award winning film Twilight, you would then give birth to a super baby that will someday fuck your ex boyfriend who is a werewolf.
Okay,
I think that's what happens.
If you were to abort a child like that, would you do it the same ways, or would you need a stake through the heart, or maybe some liquid garlic in a bottle?
Yeah, probably like you take like a douche, fill it with garlic oil, garlic. And just shove it right up there. From my experience, I don't know what other people's experiences are, but
yeah, a lot of people probably kill the vampires differently.
Yeah, I have an answer. A group of vampires has variously been called a clutch, brood, coven, pack, or clan. So we got some choices.
Kevin, you said clutch. Clan, Kevin.
I know. I always thought it was a vampire clan.
A shimmering shape suddenly appears out of thin air. A shape that takes on human form, finally crystallizing into focus.
Then I'ma start rocking gold teeth and fangs.
I let you know from the get-go, a little garlic in the cross won't stop this blood sucking this. Slave making this, hostage taking this, sneakiest, continental rapist. Make no mistake in this. I'm not speaking on a fictional, figuring the folklore, but more like the type to provoke war. Spread a lot of the poor.
Dave, what'd you bring to the table this week?
I brought 1992 Bram Stoker's Dracula, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. And, you know, when we were talking about Near Dark, the Midwest setting and how that works, I was kind of like tying those together in my mind with like spaghetti westerns and like the really gory Italian films of like the late 70s. And, you know, the thing... You know, with this Dracula, it's very much an homage. It's Francis Ford Coppola. Everyone knows Mr. Gangster, the Godfather trilogy. I mean, you know, I love it when these old Italian guys who were brought up on, you know, Bava and Fulci and Romero, when they attempt a horror or a thriller, it is always very rooted in that old 50s traditional horror movie style, and Dracula was a huge homage to this, especially in a time where a lot of the production in horror movies was really flashy and over the top, and this was even more so. It took that to a further degree, but I think it took it to a cooler degree because it was all practical effects, natural shots, and you could tell when they're trying to do an effect that is maybe campy, but you can tell they're doing it on purpose. Another movie that I'm going to touch on in a couple episodes is Cape Fear, Martin Scorsese's take on a thriller or a horror movie. And I just love when these old gangster guys, I mean, these gangster movies are considered kind of the best of the best of filmmaking. And I think a lot of times what you have to put up with in a lot of horror movies is bad acting or some bad dialogue. And sometimes it's fun, other times it's like, man, you know, that could have been a great movie if it had just been a little more refined. And that's exactly what Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula is. It's very refined. It's weird that he has Bram Stoker in the title, because they did rewrite the story. It wasn't exactly from the book. They added the love story, which I thought was really cool. It added to the elegant beauty of all the effects. You know, everyone talks about Keanu Reeves' performance in this movie as being really detracting. I didn't really find it to be that detracting, although I've read some interviews with Coppola, who he's pretty open about his feeling on his performance.
I loved this movie. I've seen it a number of times, of course. I didn't find Keanu that distracting either. You know, like, it just seems like, I think he was an easy target at the time, and well, maybe it's not the greatest, what is this, Shakespeare? I think there's so much other stuff going on in this movie that if you're worried about how accurate Keanu's accent is, I just think you should relax and try to take in, turn off all the lights everywhere in your house and watch this movie. It's definitely the horniest of the movies that we watched this week, which I appreciated. And I would say that far from a romance, I think that this is a cautionary tale about the pickup artist community. Are you guys familiar with the pickup artist community? Kat, you know
those
guys?
Yeah, I know a few.
Okay, so Gary Oldman's Dracula is a guy who, from the Reddit pickup artist community. And what happens is he grows his hair long, he puts on a bunch of rings and jewelry, he has a top hat and some bad sunglasses, and the next thing you know, he rolls in, he's taking everyone's girlfriend, you know, like nothing, and you know, all the women are suddenly like, oh boy, this guy, he has long hair and a top hat, and he's so eccentric and pretentious. You know, what husband? You know, they forget they even have a boyfriend or husband, and they're just, you know, they're off with Dracula, and then that's the end of it. That's how easy it is with these floozies.
The whole time I was just like, they should just be together.
What, him and Mina, or him and Lucy? Because he's already made his way through, you know, the rest of them. I mean, who can say where this guy's loyalties really are?
Right, it's true. I liked the giant. He had a lot of different looks in this, but my favorite look was that where he was like almost a bat, but he was still kind of a human when he was on top of Lucy. You know what I'm talking
werewolf?
About?
Like the kind of
no,
wolf,
I think that was a bat.
Type?
I think he was a bat.
No,
no,
is
no
it
that
like,
was a werewolf.
He's been. He was all three. He was that weird bat, like, towards the end. A very, like, weird, like, webbed hand-to-torso situation.
Yeah, when he's banging Lucy, he's definitely a werewolf.
No, he's not. He's a bat. He's not a werewolf. Why would he be a werewolf?
He's a werewolf.
Look it up.
He's
practical
all three. He's
guy.
He was, like, a... He was, like, old creepy guy, young, hot guy-ish, if that's your thing. Bat and werewolf. He's, like, multifaceted...
some great hairstyles.
I'm with Kevin on this. He was definitely a werewolf. I'm with you. He was a werewolf when he was having sex with Lucy Goosey. But I would actually, I think saying werewolf kind of sells it a little bit short. I would say he was a lycanthrope during that scene. Kevin, what'd you think of this one?
All right, so I have a pretty huge sentimental attachment to this movie. I own it on Blu-ray. I have the original movie poster. This is the first movie that I took a girl to, and it's the first time we ever held hands. And we've now been together for 21 years.
Wow.
So,
God bless the horny movie.
I gotta tell you, there's nothing worse than being a middle school kid watching the Keanu Reeves orgy scene and you're like holding your crush's hand and I'm like, there must have been like gallons of water dripping out of my palms. Like, so anyway,
that's cute.
Believe it or not, despite that sentimentality, I hadn't seen this movie in a really long time. It's awesome. To answer your question, Dave, the reason it has Bram Stoker's Dracula in the title is because Winona Ryder plays Mina in the movie. She bought the rights so that nobody else could make this movie. And she brought it to Coppola. And she was nervous because she had just recently dropped out of The Godfather 3 last minute. So she kind of brought this to him as like a, hey, can we still be cool? I think Gary Oldman's performance as Dracula, particularly the double butt haircut that he has in the castle, is incredible. Apparently, Oldman at the time was going through a divorce and was seriously abusing drugs. So I guess the entire filming of this movie, he was a fucking nightmare to work with. You know, there's scenes like when Sadie Frost as Lucy is kind of possessed and you know, sort of doing her thing to thinking of Dracula. Apparently, Coppola kept encouraging Oldman to stand off to the side and talk sexy to her. And in interviews, Sadie Frost, who plays Lucy later, was asked, what was Gary Oldman saying to you? And she said, oh, none of it is ever repeatable. But I mean, overall, I don't mind Keanu because here's the thing with the accent. Keanu Reeves' accent is very inconsistent. But if you watch this movie and you want to judge everybody's accent, by the third act of this movie, nobody is using the same accents. Anthony Hopkins, who is a legend, is all over the fucking place.
Well, he plays two different characters.
Which I never understood that either.
He does?
It was like, did they forget to cast a priest and he was just like hanging out in the beginning?
Priest in the beginning.
I just thought it was the same guy. I thought he like circled back and was like, I got you now, punk. I guess not.
This movie, speaking of, you know, horny eroticism, has two of my biggest celebrity crushes in this movie.
I knew it.
Monica Bellucci and Tom Waits.
Yes.
Yeah.
T-dubs.
Yeah.
I was very excited by that cameo.
Tom Waits, yeah, he played a great Renfield. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anyone who could have done a better job at that.
I mean, his accent was also terrible. Let's be honest. It wasn't great, but because it was Tom Waits, it was somehow like 10 times better than Keanu's.
You know an actor that has always kind of reminded me of Tom Waits, though, and we're going to talk about him next? Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
They totally look alike.
Yep.
Dave, look, I've been waiting the whole time. One, I wasn't going to bring up Tom Waits since both you and Kat have inked him on your body. Two, typically at this point, I would have gone on for 25 minutes with you guys begging me to shut up about the effects. But Dave, you were so excited about this week. It sounded like you actually did some homework. So can you talk about these effects?
What do you mean, actually? You know, actually is probably one of my least favorite words.
Oh.
You know? Oh, hey, check out my new song. Wow, that was actually good. Wow. Oh, you got a haircut. Yeah. Your hair actually looks good. You know? No, I didn't actually do my homework this week. I can't watch a movie and take notes. Sometimes I look up some facts about the movie, but I smoke too much weed to retain the information. But you know, I do know that, you know, I've watched makings of this movie, and that's really what you got to do, because he fired the effects team and hired his son to do all the practical effects, and I believe the two of them just collaborated on cool ideas and cool film layers and colors. And you know, when you're working in that the realm of like the 50s horror, I mean, there's, you can do anything you want. You can have a pair of giant eyeballs in the sky and no one, it doesn't seem weird to you, because that was very much like the dreamlike state of that early horror stuff.
Yeah, there was a very strict policy during the making of this movie about the effects, and they, Francis Ford Coppola, wouldn't even allow film compositing. If they had to do that, they had to use the green screen, and it really works. They were going for a classic monster movie feel. I think it really works, particularly having just seen the 1922 Nosferatu, and I just saw the original Creature from the Black Lagoon not long ago. That sort of very classic Universal Pictures horror on late night local affiliate television, that very warm sort of feeling, this movie nails it. And I'm not even like the fantasy kind of gothic realm isn't really always my wheelhouse, but certain movies can pull me into that fantasy. And I was just so taken by this. Another
there was no green screen. They didn't use any green screens. There was no digital.
Oh, I thought they did.
Yeah, there was no
everything
post
was off
at
projection.
All. Yeah, there was no post was effects at all. Nothing went to an editing table or anything. Or they chopped the scenes together, but there was no post effects at all. Whatever you see is like happening as, like you said, a projection or a dual image happening. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Well, however they. However they created the blowjob scene, I thought was really, really worked, because it gave you at the end or toward the end, Mina, I've never seen Dracula get a blowjob before. Then there are a lot of Dracula, a lot of vampire movies have a little bit of sexy time. But there's like a full simulation scene, and however that was recreated, I don't know. You know, what the details of the effects were, it was pretty effective.
I bet it was.
But you know what I'm talking about, right? There's literally a blowjob scene at the end when she gives Dracula a blowjob.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I think I missed that part.
I didn't remember it either.
When she's turning, she has to drink his blood.
Yeah.
Right at the end.
Yeah,
on
but
the
it's
bed,
from his
and then
chest.
She starts like.
Yeah, his chest.
He cut his chest, and she's sucking.
It starts
on his boob.
Yeah, I know, but then I know, but yeah, I know, but by the middle of that scene, the rest of the way, she's lower than the chest. Okay. Just watch it again; you'll see what I'm saying. Maybe you guys missed it.
Maybe we did.
Those aren't usually the types of things
I
overlook.
Say, that's like usually.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised.
I have notes about a nipple licking, so usually I.
Well, a little too subtle for you, Kat.
A little bit. I personally was very excited to watch this movie because I found out it's the Dracula film that one of my favorite pinball machines is based off of. So that was fun for me.
Yes. I played that.
It's so good. I think there's one at Coast City Comics right now, but none of us can go anywhere, so I guess it really doesn't matter. But it was fun for me as a pinball nerd to hear like all the things that I would normally like activate while I'm playing, like Draculia, welcome to my home. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm activating that multi-ball, blech, you know. But from the comfort of my chaise lounge at my house. I was excited by the Tom Waits appearance very much. I didn't know he was in it. I didn't do any research before I watched this. This kind of falls into the category of like the classic, you know, sexy vampire films in the same vein, I guess, of Interview with a Vampire. But unlike most goth girls, I did not like that movie. So my hopes were a little bit higher, I think, for Dracula. Once I found out it was connected to the pinball machine, maybe. But yeah, I thought, you know, Keanu's just Keanu. I wasn't super thrown off by his accent. I did make, you know, a kind of like ranked list of worst accent to best accent, but no one really has a good one as we talked about. So
I don't even know what a Romanian accent sounds like, so I can't really judge that well, but you know, why would people, you know, Dracula's got to move. I mean, if you're allergic to garlic, why would you live in like Romania? And they're always in like Italy, and that'd be like me being allergic to coconuts and moving to the Bahamas or the rainforest or something. You know, it doesn't make sense. You like the vampires in the Midwest in Near Dark, they had it right. They're in the Midwest of America where people think ketchup is spicy. You know, no one. There's no garlic there.
Yeah, the scene with Lucy is in bed and she's sickened with, and she's essentially turning, and they bring the giant thing of garlic and throw it on the table. She starts freaking out like, you know, somebody just passed her a bag of dog shit or something. It's pretty funny.
I think she was probably my favorite character out of the whole bunch, because she was living the dream back in the day. You know, she had those big boobs. She had all these suitors. One of them was from Texas, which seemed pretty cool back then, probably.
Small-time girl. Having a lover from Texas sounds so cool.
Oh, it's so, you know, Texan. It's so exotic, you know.
Joe Exotic.
I think the best scene in the entire movie, my favorite scene, and I'd forgotten all about it, is the shadow scene, is when Harker, Keanu's character, gets to the castle. You've got old, wrinkly, double beehive haired Gary Oldman kind of, you know, spinning his web around him. And just his shadow, and knowing Dave, like, through finally watching this and kind of digging into it, that it was all practical effects and everything.
Yeah, there was another guy dressed just like him casting the shadow.
Yeah, they hired a mime.
Yeah, the shadow could move independently from what appeared to be Gary Oldman's shadow.
Yeah, that was just my favorite scene.
And that's so basic. That's such a basic effect. That's like, that's like Trent's hand puppet show, you know. It's like that. It's that basic of an effect, and it has such a great result in both the movie and Trent's finger puppet show.
Thank you. I don't use shadow any puppet. Digital manipulation with my hand shadow puppets. Yeah, it's all practical effects, believe it or not.
Trent fired the FX crew and hired his son
Calvin.
My movie this week was Chronos. This is 1993, the first feature film by 2017's Best Director and Best Picture winner Guillermo del Toro, who we are going to talk about a lot more in depth in a future episode. But he won Best Picture and Best Director for The Shape of Water. If you haven't seen The Shape of Water, it's one of my favorite movies. I went to the theater two nights in a row to see that movie. It's so good. But this is his first. Got his start doing vampires. Chronos is a very unconventional vampire movie. It's a lot different than any of the others that we're talking about. And it's about a small mechanical device, a little gold device, I'd say the size of a baseball, but it's shaped like a bug. And inside this wind-up mechanical device is some kind of insect creature which grants eternal life to the recipient. Of course, it exacts a price for this, but this device has been handed down, not necessarily handed down, but it hundreds of years after its creation, this device falls into the hands of an antique dealer and his granddaughter. And chaos ensues. One of the things I liked about this movie is that there are no sprouting of fangs. There is no shape-shifting. There is no gothic romance other than the familial between the grandfather and granddaughter. But there is blood for everlasting life. Also definitely kind of does the addiction metaphor quite a bit. I really like this movie. It was a lot of fun. It's a little bit lighter, I think. I mean, I guess it's a lot lighter than the other three. Kevin, what did you think of this one?
This is a great one, and thank you for picking it. I didn't know this movie existed, and I love Guillermo del Toro. I always thought that his first film was The Devil's Backbone. So when you were like, always wanted to pick Chronos, del Toro, I was like, what the hell is Trent talking about? So I watched this.
He quit making films after Chronos. He took a huge break because his dad was kidnapped. And he took a huge break from making films. And James Cameron gave him the money to get his dad released as a hostage when he was kidnapped.
My notes literally say, save all the Del Toro stuff, like his father's kidnapping, etc., for the Del Toro episode.
I just wanted to point out that you were able to read that on the internet as well.
No.
I had that in my notes.
Dave didn't get to it first. The listener, just in case you've never heard of, there's a site, it's called wikipedia.org, and there's a lot of stuff on there. I should have mentioned that we watched this movie on Criterion. It's on other platforms as well, but that's where we saw it, and it's a great deal. Criterion has a lot of stuff that you can't find anywhere else, and Kronos is one of them.
Yeah, so my actual thoughts on the film were I loved it, and I think kind of like Near Dark, I appreciate both of these movies for avoiding a lot of like the traditional vampire tropes. Like, I don't think in Near Dark you ever see a fang. And in Kronos, you know, Del Toro has a long history with vampires. The guy clearly loves them. But like you said, Trent, the blood, you know, there's a scene where it's this long drawn out scene where he's licking blood off of like a sink, and then he's licking blood off a floor.
Off the bathroom floor.
And watching that, like, right now during, like, a pandemic, I'm like, Jesus Christ. But it's got our homie Ron Perlman in it, who's a Del Toro fave. He used him in, Hellboy 1 and 2. I love Ron Perlman's character in this movie. I think he probably is the reason it does feel a little bit lighter. But at the same time, Ron Perlman's character, I think, is super complex. Because you mentioned this device, obviously a device like this is going to be sought after. And there's a character who is terminally ill who is seeking this device. And his nephew is played by Ron Perlman. And Ron Perlman is just a slave to his uncle for the inheritance. So he's lived this terrible life. Probably a life of privilege, but just basically being an errand boy. And I like seeing, you know, kind of Ron Perlman's character unfold. And also the actor Federico Lupi, who plays the grandfather that you're talking about. I think he and the storyline of his granddaughter. Again, I'm a sucker for any kind of like family line in a movie like this. I think he gave a phenomenal performance.
I actually had never seen this movie before, and I wasn't crazy about it. It was a little slow going for me, and I didn't I didn't like the kills that much. I wanted the grandfather to really get retribution and be like some sort of crazy badass. But he was just like jumping on people and falling through glass windows or glass ceilings. I don't know. It wasn't really for me. Del Toro always does the thing where there's a child implicated somehow in the killings. And I kind of like that aspect of it, that she like followed him around and even helped him once he started to turn. But I don't know. It wasn't. I started later on in Guillermo del Toro's career, and following it back, he's come a long way. For sure.
I had never seen it. I think going into it, I thought it was gonna. You know, I was like, yeah, let's watch Pan's Labyrinth again. You know, but with vampires kind of situation. Was I crazy about it compared to the rest of the movies this week? No. Did I really understand what was going on for most of the film? No. Do I love Ron Perlman? Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
I always picture Ron Perlman at like some sort of casting where there's just a sign that says hired goon, and he's just waiting there, and he's just getting the job every time.
He's like, what are my lines? Let me know.
Hey, you want me to get him, boss?
Yeah,
hey, boss, I'll get him. Yeah.
There's no actual, Dave, you alluded to the kills. There's no actual feasting on a person until the very end of the movie. He's sort of greased the grandfather who is turned by the Kronos device, sort of feasting mostly like on the device itself, and then he's picking up blood where he can, like off the restroom floor and things like that. But there isn't the traditional, he doesn't just turn into this maniac who's out there killing people. So he's kind of sort of get his blood where he can. Did you guys notice after he dies, quote unquote. People think that he's dead and they think that he's been cremated, but he's not. Did you notice that his suit is on backwards after that?
Yeah, that bugged me.
Yeah.
It's on backwards like for the whole rest of it.
Because I think his in the accident, his head was got twisted around so that when they were preparing his body for the funeral, they had the suit on backwards to match his head. But then when he came back, he didn't need to do that.
Oh, I didn't get that. I just thought he just had his suit on backwards.
Thank you, Trent, because I also was super confused. And I think I watched this over a couple nights, and I kind of rewound to go back to rewatch the autopsy scene. So I kind of saw the post autopsy scene twice, and I was like, "Why the fuck is his suit on backwards?"
That's why, because in the accident, because he went off the cliff, and he's got twisted around.
That autopsy scene is unbelievable. It's brutal to watch. I think any, like, because there aren't a lot of main characters in this movie, but for some reason that dude that played the guy performing I say autopsy, but I guess he's like basically, yeah, he's the mortician. That dude is like so over the top, and he's like eating while he's like doing stuff to the body and like trying to fix his forehead. That whole thing to me for some reason was like super unsettling. And there's also a scene where Ron Perlman is just whistling "We Wish You a Merry Christmas," that like for like a split second, like I kind of found it like kind of lighthearted because I didn't pick out the song real quick. And to me, it was like one of the most chilling moments of the entire movie. Just this psycho dude happily whistling "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" as he gets ready to do some pretty messed up shit.
Well, his character, Angel, the goon in question, he's also obsessed with this upcoming nose job that he's going to get. And he's even like showing people prospective noses and asking them to choose which one is best. And it was weird because the next movie we're going to talk about, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, both movies feature a character doing the nose job thing. And I don't know if that's supposed to be... because this is Spanish or Mexican, I guess, and A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is Iranian. I didn't know if this was supposed to be like some sort of cultural or ethnic self-rejection that they're so obsessed with changing their nose, but it struck me that both of those movies feature that kind of seemingly randomly.
One thing I noticed, you guys were mentioning the ties between heroin addiction or drug addiction. I say heroin because it's intravenous, and vampires. I liked how this one went with, you know, a vampire being compared to a parasite or an insect. At one point when they're talking about the little gold insect looking talisman or whatever, they say that it somehow works with like how bugs can be frozen for hundreds of years and then come back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the insect aspect of it. And that's, I like that this movie was a different take on a vampire flick.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I thought it could have been done better. And I think it could be done better by Guillermo del Toro if he had maybe the means that he has now. But
yeah, I mean, as a first feature, it's pretty impressive, but sure, 30 years later, it doesn't quite stand, I guess, with some of these other movies, but it's still, for a first feature film, definitely shows some promise that was eventually fulfilled.
Well, I mean, the insect thing I thought was super interesting because, you know, the whole point of the device is supposed to be this amazing invention, and you don't initially know that there's actually a bug in there, but really what the device does is it traps you. You know, you look at Jesus Gris, the grandfather, you know, he's trapped. He's now trapped as this vampire doing, these horrible things. And then you look at, like I said, Ron Perlman. He's basically trapped by his uncle into just being this degenerate thug. You look at the uncle that is seeking the device. He's trapped in what I'm assuming is an inevitable cancerous death. And then I thought it was super interesting that you look, you know, when they finally show you inside the device, well, there's a bug who's also trapped. I mean, essentially, this movie is just people that are trapped in different ways. And And it's a cool take on too, where, you know, there's a lot of religious themes here, and I think it's interesting. Maybe it's because we're coming off of faith, but you know, Ron Perlman, you just mentioned Trent. His name is Angel, and then the grandfather's name is Jesus. So I think there's a lot of, you know, good and evil things at play. A lot of
the Kronos device is initially is hidden in an archangel statue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely a different take on like a vampire movie, but I think what I want in a vampire movie is like, you know, people feasting on your vampires feasting on people, and then that gothic romance. Like, that's what I want going into a vampire movie. So maybe that's kind of what I was expecting, and then was, you know, let down from that. But was it a bad movie? No, I just wasn't, you know, comparatively, it wasn't my jam.
I liked the premise, and I liked a lot of the concepts behind it. I just... The pacing, it was mostly the vibe for me that killed it. It didn't kill it. I didn't hate this movie. This isn't a bad movie. It looks great and all that. I just found it to be a little bit just kind of nothing jumped out at and grabbed me during it. I didn't have any like strong emotions.
I think there's a lot of other vampire Del Toro stuff you can check out too. You know, Del Toro obviously did Blade 2, which I think is the best. Best of the Blade movies. He had such a unique spin on the kind of hybrid vampires that were in that movie.
But he puts his the guy's head against the moving subway car?
It's been a long time since I saw Blade 2. I just remember enjoying it.
That was one of my favorite deaths in the Blade movies.
But he did the Strain. I don't know if you guys ever watched The Strain on FX. I think it's all on Hulu now. I dug it. It's a vampire horror novel trilogy that Del Toro and Chuck Hogan and I think Del Toro's wife all wrote together, and then FX developed it for a TV series. But Del Toro had a movie that was supposed to come out, like, I can't find much after this, after 2015, but he was talking big about a going back to a low budget movie, going back to his Mexican roots, and doing this movie called Silva that had, it almost sounds like They Live. It was talking about having a Mexican wrestler, a lucha libre, discover that all of Mexico's politicians are vampires, and he has to go clean this up.
Wow, interesting.
It sounded interesting, but I literally everything about it disappears about 5 years ago. Obviously, he's doing fine.
Well, that's probably because someone was like, hey, have you ever seen this movie, They Live? And then he just stopped. Because that sounds like a crazy Spanish coincidence between the wrestler and the conspiracy.
Right.
Real quick, I just wanted to mention that I had two ticks on me today from hiking. And I did kind of vampire vibe.
Maybe they were.
I wish that I would turn into a tick if I got bit by a tick. That would be dope.
Like the comic book character, yeah.
Or just a giant bug.
My pick this
week
was...
Excuse me. Sorry.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, Kat, just go right in. You can just say, you know, however you want to do it.
I think she would if Dave would stop.
My pick this week was...
Why did he do it on purpose? I was just trying to just cut it off.
I'm going to fucking kill myself. okay. Anyway.
You don't need to wait for the verbal cue. You can just, when there's a pause, go right into it.
Speaking of pause, Kat, didn't you get attacked by another cat before the
show?
Oh,
yeah, I got attacked.
That was a confusing text to get.
No, get out of here. Come on. Come on. Hey, ow, 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 what the fuck? I'm sorry. I didn't want everyone to yell at me when I wasn't there on FaceTime right at 8.
No, but cat getting attacked by a cat. There was just too many cats in the sentence for me to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was getting ready to record. I was getting my little station set up in my bedroom, and I was trying to get my roommate's cat out of my room, and she decided to attack me.
Why can't the cat be in? Why can't she just be in there? What's the big deal?
Because there's some animosity between the pets of the house right now, where I have my big, fat, asshole cat, Marin, who's right above my little iPad here, just staring at me creepily. They don't get along, so she was in here, then the other cat ran in when I opened the door, and so I went to grab her to get out, and she just annihilated my forearms. Ooh. I'll show you guys. There's a couple.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I wasn't being dramatic.
Oh my god.
Have a literal terrifying wound underneath this bandage. I'm not going to take it off. Yeah.
I can see it through the bandage. So,
that's crazy.
It hurt. This one hurts. It's a whole thing.
Can we get some pics of Kat's injuries on the Instagram page?
Yes. Yeah, we're going to need you got to see this. Are you sure?
I will upload some pics.
Are you sure it wasn't a mountain lion? Oh my god.
Could have been. She thinks she's a mountain lion, and she's something. I'll tell you what. Anyway, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night was my pick for this week. I watched it on Shudder. I believe it's still on there. Written and directed by Anna Lily Amirpour, which I'm sure I'm saying absolutely correct. I don't think I would be overzealous in saying this is a perfect film, but it was a perfect film. It was just like the most satisfying revenge, I guess you would say, flick for me, for women who just want to walk home from work at night. There have been many times because my route from the bar that I used to work at and hopefully will still work at once this whole thing is over, walking home from the bar, and I would pass Trent's little step. And every single time I would walk by at like midnight or something, Trent would be like, it's a little late. It's a little late for you to be walking home, huh? And I was like, what the? Yeah, Trent, it is. Every time it's dark enough for me to not see my surroundings, I am terrified to walk anywhere. But that's why I usually have, my 3-inch nails that are pointy, my pepper spray and my taser. I'm ready to go. But the fact that I have to have all those things to walk 2 miles home from work at night is a very sad and stressful thing for me. And so watching this movie and just seeing this girl skateboarding around, fucking killing dudes that are shitty to, in general, but also to women, was it was quite the magical time for me.
There are some cool characters in this for sure. Like the imagery of the girl in the hijab skateboarding down like the shadowy street. That was like a really cool image.
That's the director.
Oh, she is the director.
Sheila Vand plays the girl who walks home alone at night, but the mm-hmm. director is a lifelong skateboarder, so she filled in on all the skateboarding scenes in the movie.
Oh, nice. And I also like the Die Antwoord looking dude, the gangster dude in the very beginning. Who looked like the ninja.
I did not like him, surprisingly.
Well, no, I liked him because he was a good character to hate. Like, okay, you can't wait for him to die as soon as you meet him.
Yeah. Whenever someone has a neck tattoo that just says sex across the front, I'm assuming they're being set up to be an unlikable guy in a film.
A lot of the women in this movie probably don't know that it says sex on his neck because it's written in English. So it's like when the girls have the tramp stamp of just some like Asian lettering or whatever. Like there's probably Asians that are mad offended, like, oh my god, I can't believe she wrote slut on her back. But if we see it, we're just like, oh, she's cultured.
She's been abroad. That's great. This one's classified as the first Iranian vampire Western. And holy shit, does it absolutely hold up to that. It's just aesthetically so beautiful. It's in black and white. I just thought this was a great film. The score, the sound design, the soundtrack. They throw some English, you know, 80s pop songs in there. Three chef kisses.
I love this one. This is another, this was very similar to me to Near Dark. I love that whole, and it's black and white, so you have the shadows are a big part of it. I loved the initial reveal scene when you find out that the titular girl is a vampire, where she's sort of doing the finger in the mouth thing with the terrible pimp. I love that. I love that reveal, and it's a sort of like... It's a hinting at like a dick bite off scene, which we haven't. I don't think we've covered a movie with a dick bite off, but it is an important part of the horror and disturbing film genre. From time to time, you will see that. And actually, there's one coming up in a future episode. But I liked that reveal, and I just loved this vampire. Like out of all these movies, this is the character that, you know, I would be her familiar. You know, in hopes that she would turn me in exchange for my services as a familiar, and then we could just spend eternity undead together, skateboarding around, listening to cool music. She's kind of like goth, she's a pretty rad chick, and feasting on blood. I would totally go for it.
Yeah, this is a very interesting movie in that there's very little dialogue. It is in black and white, but she somehow still packs so much into this film. The black and white reminded me a lot of The Eyes of My Mother, which is not Iranian or Persian, but the vibe reminded me of that. And then Under the Shadow is another great Persian film, horror film. Like that. You know, I think I like seeing some of these markets kind of emerging now and getting into some of the genre work. But the thing for me in this movie is a lot of these movies that we talked about tonight, and particularly this one, they deal with how lonely immortality is. And this isolation you have, because again, this movie sort of has kind of a love story woven into it. You know, you are what you are. You know, you have Near Dark, you know, not just May, but I don't think we talked about Homer, who is like the kid vampire, who's actually the oldest. And then you have obviously the love story woven into Bram Stoker's Dracula. You have Kronos, where Jesus realizes quickly that he does not want to live forever. But I think that the girl in this one is the greatest representation of that. Like you said, Trent, anyone that's got that cool a taste in music, sure, I'll like hang out with you. Feel free to turn me. I also thought the characters, like you talked about, Dave, you had, like, I think you're talking about Saeed, the drug dealer, is the character in the beginning. You know, he looks like a shrunken down, like The Rock or something, like this wimpy, you know, trying to be The Rock or something. For a film without a ton of dialogue, she does do an amazing job developing a whole bunch of characters that you feel for, whether it's hate or whether you're sympathetic, empathetic, or you just like totally dig them. Good for her. Like this, it really is. This movie really could have fallen flat. And to some people, it probably still will. It's definitely an acquired taste, I think, this type of film.
Did you say that he reminded you, the drug dealer reminded you of The Rock? Is that what you just said?
Yes.
The Rock,
like a shrunken down, like tattooed version
once
of
you
The Rock.
Shrink like, down The Rock and take off his tattoos. I mean, what do you have? I mean, that means like Paul Rubens is like The Rock.
I didn't think the Rock has tattoos.
Yeah, I think so. He has some tribal tattoos, maybe.
Huh. It's like a barbed wire.
I didn't find him to be like
a barbed wire on his
The Rock at all.
I don't know about that.
He's grimy.
He reminded me of a guy that Dave and I used to know. I'm afraid let's just leave it at that. But there's a guy that Dave and I used to know who was a drug dealer and a scary guy that this drug dealer.
What's his name begin with?
S.
Okay, I got you.
Honestly, I'm still a fan. I want to go further than that. But the romance in this reminded me a lot of Let the Right One In. Mm-hmm. There's the whole scene, the ear piercing scene where he gives the girl, the titular girl, the earrings, but her ears aren't pierced. And so there's a very romantic scene where she pierces her ears with the safety pin so that she can wear the earrings. And she puts both in, and he looks at her and he says, "What lucky earrings." And I was like, oh man, what a player. Great line.
All they had to do was throw like a Smith song in this thing and you would have been done, huh, Trent?
And then she gives him the whole speech about like, I'm bad. Yeah. You don't know the bad things I've done. You know, she gives him this whole thing, which is like, this is strictly the province of lady vampires. Like, every lady vampire has to give the speech to the guy before she turns him about how bad she is. And he doesn't know the bad things she's done. Male vampires never do this. They don't have, you know, they might be a little reluctant sometimes, but you never get these speeches from the guy vampires. It's kind of a thing reserved for the ladies. And, you know, it's kind of cute.
You know, I'll accept it from girl vampires because, you know, they really have no choice. They are it's a toxic relationship with them. But, you know, when you get a regular girl that gives you the spiel that's like, oh, you know, I'm bad. Don't fall for me and all this.
Like, I'm not like other
it's
girls.
It's just an excuse to be a dick.
That's right. It's just an excuse. It's an excuse to be a dick is what that is. Yes.
I like the club scene. So Arash is the character we're talking about that becomes her her love interest, if you will. Did you guys notice when they're at the club that he in his like vampire costume looked so much like Taika Waititi in What We Do in the Shadows that I was like immediately like done. That movie has ruined all things vampires for me going forward.
Yeah, it's like what Spinal Tap did to Hard Rock is what We Do in Shadows did to vampires. you find these vampires in a part of the world that is very rich in garlicky cuisine. Curious.
Also, the heroine in this one is explicit. In this movie, they don't just like suggest the heroine. There's literal heroin going on in that the main character's dad is an addict, and so you're not only sort of playing with the metaphor, but you're actually literally in it.
Yeah, I loved the prostitute character, Ati. She sort of ends up obviously she's, you know, addicted and turning tricks. She ends up dealing with the dad. But that actress
Sex worker.
I'm sorry.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is she not? She's not a prostitute. She's a sex worker.
I'm just saying.
Is that where we're going?
The term that we use now is sex worker.
Okay.
I still call myself a
hooker.
Yeah.
Yourself
anyway,
that sex worker.
That particular actress.
I prefer a hooker.
Kevin, get it right.
That
Kevin.
Particular actress, Mozan Marni. I think maybe like my Monica Bellucci, Dave. She's gorgeous. She's on this show called The Blacklist, which has nothing to do with horror, but it's a James Spader, primetime, bad guy show. And she was also on House of Cards. I love her character, and it may just be because I love her.
Kat, what do we call pimps now? What would the pimp in this movie be called?
An exploitative asshole.
Oh, wait, how can he? He's a sex manager.
I take offense to that.
Listen, I'm just trying to educate you guys.
He's a sex supervisor.
He's a piece of shit, is what he is, Trent. I don't know what to fucking tell you.
Well, I just didn't know if he had a professional title that you would prefer.
Well, I'll give him a professional title.
I like that his answering machine, the outgoing message on his machine just says, "Leave a message, hooker."
He's talking to Dave.
That's When I will say that that was a very a Boogie Nights kind of apartment. I thought Sister Christian was going to start playing when they went in there. But I definitely had an emotional reaction to this movie. There was that scene, and I think it's because I just started relating to the girl so quickly on. She's so lonely, and then, you know, he's high on ecstasy and, like, you know, meets her on the street. And then, you know, he thinks they're going to get all hot and heavy and sexy. So he's like, she pushes like his head up and like exposes his neck. And you're like, oh, is she really going to kill the main character like right now? But then she just like, you see her head slowly go down. And you're like, oh, is this going to be sexy? But she's just listening to his heartbeat. And I just started to cry. I cried. Wow. I will say. I had to pause. I was like, it's fine. I'm not lonely.
If vampires were real, like, we would just all be vampires mm-hmm. now. Because if I got to be a vampire, I would immediately call up, like, all my friends, like, dude, I have to suck your blood. Check it out. Dude, check this out. I suck your blood. You suck Kevin's blood. And then we all become vampires. We can do the podcast for 1,000 years. Let's go.
Get a camper van, paint the windows black. Let's hit the road, baby.
Real quick on next week's episode, we're going to be doing Home Invasion. We're going to be watching Funny Games, which you can find the original on Criterion. The 2007 remake is free on Vudu. We're going to be watching I See You, which is a super recent movie, free on Prime. We're also going to be watching Get In, which is another recent movie on Netflix. And we're doing 1979's When a Stranger Calls, which is free if you have Showtime or Amazon with the Showtime add-on. So please watch and join us next week for a discussion on Home Invasion.